Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. So I'm in Facebook jail. I'm disgusted. I'm not quite sure how to react to this because it's a very strange thing because I had a public page. Okay, that's no longer going to happen. My Facebook page will no longer be public. If you're not a friend of mine, you're not going to get on. You can't even comment. Okay, and this is in self-defense for the leftist trolls that I welcomed onto my page, that I let comment, that I let spew invectives, lies, calling me a rapist, murderer, you know, sexist, racist, homophobe, tyrant. What's the word I'm trying to think of? Seditionist, you know, insurrectionist, everything. And that was okay. I didn't mind that. You know, it's not true, of course. Well, maybe the tyrant part. But as far as everything else goes, they were welcome to lie on my page. And I let them do it. And my friends would comment on that. And we all commented on it. I even commented on it. So here's where it gets really crazy. All right. So I comment. In fact, I've got the comment right here. I might even read it. So Bill's probably chuckling to himself saying, Greg, you could take half an hour doing this. I know you can. And I'm not going to, Bill. I really am not. Let's see if I get the right screenshot here. Ah, here we go. So here's the comment I made. I'm going to leave out the name of the person. So one of the leftist trolls who goes under a fake profile, who I named in this comment. I won't name it on the air here, although I did the other day. Anyway, I said in response to this person who was lying constantly, I said, folks, don't get too involved in debating. You know, Sally Smith is a fake profile. I can say that. Or should I say, this is her real name, right? She is a regular troll with nothing to add, who only wants to get you stirred up because she thinks she's the new leftist warrior. I wouldn't go into too many personal details as she will only use them against you. Notice she never says anything about herself, although she did admit to being married to a cop. That's good news so that when I report her for stalking, I can go right to him. Okay, so that's what I said, right? And all of a sudden she goes whimpering to Facebook, and then the other troll went whimpering to Facebook when I called him out too. Now, nothing I said there was radically insulting or dangerous or cruel or harassing or bullying or anything like that. I was really actually talking to one friend of mine who revealed people were revealing too much about themselves. I said, don't do that. You know, that's who the comment was for. But because I mentioned her name, her real name, you know, who used to call this show under Margaret the Liberal, which I knew was fake then too, I'm now banned for 30 days on Facebook. So you're going to miss my witty, pithy, you know, great comments that you're all reacting to, and then the huge numbers that you were. And I really appreciate it too. That was kind of fun. But in the meantime, let's get to Bill before he starts, you know, throwing his phone against the wall and other things trying to get on the show. Hang on. Here we go.
On site, Action Radio presents the Fetke Report.
Good morning, Action Radio Land. It is pouring down rain here in the southeast, especially here in Florida. Got some bad weather coming our way, tornadoes and other fun stuff. It is springtime in the south, and this is business as usual. You know, Greg, you know, you make me out to sound like I'm a little spoiled liberal brat, which I'm not. I have patience, unlike the liberal left, to let things play out the way they need to.
Well, I took 2 minutes.
If you did go two more minutes, I was going to cut you off.
So. Okay, fine. Right. And how exactly were you going to do that?
I do have access.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck with that.
Actually, I don't anymore. I forgot what the password was.
Well, I changed them anyway, so don't worry about it. You wouldn't get in anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, but anyway, go ahead.
I would say the Florida House and Senate are obviously in session right now, so all sorts of fun things are happening. We have some new news in the Gatesgate. You know, as everyone knows by now, Matt Gaetz isn't part of a big deal. And we have a new person who's being implicated in this whole disaster.
Well, you have heard the first time.
You got the former tax collector down in, I think it's Pinellas County, down in the Tampa area, Greenberg. But now we got a guy by the name of Halsey, I know I'm going to say this wrong, Halsey Brashears. Uh-huh. He's a former secretary for the Department of Business and Professional Responsibility. He has come out this week and said that he has also received threatening letters. So it should be kind of interesting to
from
see
who?
If anything
from
comes of that. Or no, from the same people that Gates got his letters from.
Oh, okay. That lawyer, Don,
yeah,
somebody, that lawyer?
Letter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the extortion letter. So,
okay.
You know, and I said it last week, and I want to say this again because it's really irking me. You know, I'm reading more headlines than I'm actually reading stories right now because just the headlines in itself are making me sick. But, you know, for all these leftists and the anti-Gates people who, you know, I mean, I've always been upfront and honest. I'm not the biggest Gates fan in the world. But I truly hope this is not a true story. And if you are one of those out there who hope it is a true story, get your butt to church. Because for you to wish on a 17-year-old being human trafficked, there's something seriously morally wrong with you. Now, you know, speaking of churches, you know, and I think that we're seeing a direct correlation between church attendance and the demise of America. Church attendance is at an all-time low. Only 53% of America right now saying that they are going to church. And we're seeing that in the way lawmakers are making laws, and we're seeing how people are acting in the street. It's there is definitely a direct correlation between the two, and we're just becoming morally bankrupt as a whole. But on the lighter side, this past week, Ron DeSantis was asked if he would, when he gets his COVID shot, if he will do it publicly. And he said he wouldn't. And then he joked around saying, if I did it publicly, it would be a gun show, which I thought was just hilarious. And for those of you who are not, if the joke just went over your head, gun show talks about the fact that he has very muscular arms. That's what it's referred to. But then Nikki Haley, who is definitely looks like is going to be challenging him for the governor race next year, she turns around with a very clever tweet, even though it's very inaccurate, just like the left always is, but says, well, instead of it being a gun show, I'd rather have a gun show than the clown show that you are currently exhibiting.
Wait a minute. Do you mean Nikki Haley or Nikki Fried?
Nikki Fried. Sorry. Sorry.
That's
Nikki
okay.
Fried.
Yeah, I
wrote it. Yeah. I wrote. Yeah. Nikki Fried. Who's like the Nikki Fraley's and Haley's in South Carolina.
So, well, who knows where
Nikki
she is
Fried,
now.
She's
yeah.
Be, yeah. Yeah. But she's from there. But yeah. So
yep.
Nikki Fried is definitely going to be running against DeSantis. She's the top Democrat in the state. But once again, just like all leftists, her witty comments are not backed up by facts. They're backed up by emotion only. It has been very obvious. And, you know, if you look at the actual numbers, Florida is doing the best out of everybody in the country in getting people vaccinated. Nobody
well, that's good or bad, depending on your point of view.
Job.
Yeah, see, that's to me, that's just,
well, okay.
You know, state suicide, but that's, you know, that's another story.
Yeah, well, we're talking about an actual story here, because the story is that they're trying to make it sound like DeSantis is not capable of running anything properly, which obviously
oh, no.
is furthest from the truth. Yeah,
no,
I mean,
I agree with you there, but
the
vaccinations,
yeah.
the vaccinations themselves, the messenger RNA shots, are anything but safe. And you look at vaccine
well, yeah,
impact
and
news
we,
or health
we
impacts.
Know, we
yeah.
know that, but I you're missing the point of the story.
No, I'm not. DeSantis is doing very well with something I think he shouldn't be doing very well with, but he is doing very well with it. So I understand your point correctly. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so with that being said, you know, for her to come out and say that it's been a clown show and listening to all these people talk about what a bad job Florida is doing, when you actually look at all the numbers, Florida is doing better than the rest of the country at just about everything. And the only time that they can bash Florida, they also have to include California and New York in the story, and that's why you just don't hear much bashing about Florida when it's, when you talk about actual numbers, is because of that. So it's kind of interesting. You know, and then your favorite person, Dr. Fascist, he came out yesterday. Yeah, he came out yesterday. Okay. Now, last week I talked about the Texas Rangers baseball team being allowed, and I'm putting that in air quotes, being allowed to be at full capacity for their home opener. So Monday and Tuesday, they packed out 40,980 people inside their stadium.
All right.
So good for them. Okay, so now, everything. What do we know about COVID according to Dr. Fascist? It takes up to 2 weeks in order for, you know, for you to test positive. It could take up to 2 weeks. So what does he do yesterday, 2 days after the home opener? He comes out with a statement saying he is shocked that the COVID numbers have not gone up because of the Texas Rangers.
2 days later, he's an idiot. So, well, he's just a vaccine sales hack. Yeah. We know what he is, yeah.
Yes, yes. So, but yeah, so for him to make that comment, you know, this early on, it just goes to show that I don't think he really has a clue what he's doing.
No. No. He knows exactly what he's doing. He is the ultimate vaccine used car salesman in the worst sense of the word, hack. He is a hack for Big Pharma. He helped create this virus in the Wuhan lab using gain-of-function research, illegally taking U.S. taxpayer dollars, shipping them over to the Chinese lab in Wuhan, working with the Chinese Communist Party. I'm absolutely convinced of this, and that's part of what got me off Facebook. I post that story from the Daily Wire. That's one of the ones I got on screenshot.
Yeah.
That's the story that got me kicked off, and the irony of my little story is not only did I challenge it and say, hey, you know, I want to go for the review. It took my 7-day suspension and made it a 30-day. And then they said, you know, I can't go for an appeal because they have too many COVID problems. So they can't do it. And then when I went to get another screenshot today of one where my other appeal, they said that, well, we have technical problems. We can't show you why you're being suspended. So the suppression just never stops. You know, the leftist trolls just never stop, and they're in Facebook. You know, they're all over the place. The whole big tech thing is just crazy. So, again, I have to find a way to play the game to get my message out. Got a lot of background noise on your line right now. I don't know if you can wind your windows up or something. But, yeah, that's better.
It's because it's pouring down rain, and I'm sitting in my car.
Well, that makes sense. Raindrops.
Yeah, so,
nothing but raindrops. Anyway, sorry.
So now inside the Florida House, watching the Florida Senate, they just recently passed a new bill. Here in Florida, we have what's called Florida Bright Future Scholarship. And it's available with a certain grade point average, and you have to meet certain requirements. So you have a grade point average, you have community volunteer hours, and there's a couple other things that go into it. And then you could have your college almost paid for you if you go to a state college. You know, it's a great program that's funded by the Florida State Lottery. And so they just it was under attack. There was a lot of talk that it wasn't going to get fully funded this year, mostly because of the COVID, COVID, and we've had so many hurricanes. You know, the tax dollars weren't there, so they've been looking for – they're trying to look for some kind of budget cut. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get to that in a minute, to the hypocrisy on that part. But – so they were looking at it, and so there's always been a certain protection that did not allow Florida lawmakers to touch the lottery money unless it was for the education purposes. And, you know, the Bright Futures has been really – it's gotten tougher over the years. First, it was very easy to get into, and a lot of people got it. And they are making it a little bit tougher, more community service hours and stuff like that, which I think is great for any kid to be able to go out there and actually do volunteer work instead of just sitting behind a computer all day long.
That's a great idea.
Get them out to the real world. Yeah, it's a great idea. And so, you know, the whole program has been great from beginning to end. It's got a lot of people who wouldn't have got a chance to go to college to go to college. So it's been very nice. But the state senate has decided that they don't want that money protected anymore. So now they took up a provision that protected that money to education only, and left the door open for it to be borrowed from other, you know, other entities. Kind of like our Social Security in America, where now it's being used to fund Medicaid, it's being used to fund abortions, it's being used to fund whatever, you know, they want to
do. What Social Security fund? There is no Social Security fund. Yeah. It's been borrowed.
Exactly. It's just, it's a slush fund, basically. And that's what they've kind of turned this Bright Futures Fund into now, is that it will end up being a slush fund. It won't be used as a slush fund this year or next year because, you know, we're all going to remember this vote. But within the next few years, it's definitely going to get used as a slush fund. It's going to get borrowed upon. Most likely it'll get borrowed upon. They'll blame the hurricanes and that they need the money to repair from hurricanes or whatever. It's bound to happen. It's going to happen. And it's just really just it's really sad, just like every other state, the lottery system is just a bunch of lies. And that's it's just all lies.
Well, the lottery is interesting. It used to be the mafia was in the numbers game. I don't know if you remember this, but they actually did this.
Yep.
And it was basically a lottery. And then all of a sudden, you know, the government, instead of trying to fight it because they weren't succeeding at all, they said, well, if you can't beat them, join them. So they actually did that. Oh, I have to interrupt you. We got a PSA I have to play right now, and then we'll be right back.
Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom. No liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Okay, Bill, back to you.
Okay, so I'm glad you did that, because there is something new that just took that in a fight right now in Florida, and it has to do with the Marxist Joe Biden and the fact that he is not allowing cruise ships to sail. Without the vaccine passport, but here in Florida, Ron DeSantis has already said that he is banning the COVID passports from being allowed in Florida. This is causing a lot of troubles with the cruise industry and could end up costing Florida millions of dollars. Because the cruise ships actually want the COVID passports, but yet if they dock in Florida, they're not allowed to make anyone who is entering their ship show a passport because of the Florida state law.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very interesting fight. I don't know how it's going to end, but it's a very interesting fight on what is going to happen. My guess will be that there will have to be the law will kind of get rewritten, or the executive order will get rewritten, and to make exemption for, you know, cruise ships, or maybe not non-permanent businesses in Florida or something like that. I just can't see the state of Florida throwing away all the millions of dollars because of it.
It
is interesting.
Well, we need to talk to Shelby about this, and Shelby is our cruise and travel reporter, and she usually is here on Tuesdays, but she's got another assignment right now, taking away from Action Radio. But she's the one who would know. There's a cruise ship trade association. I've forgotten what the name of it is, but this is the one that causes all the problems, and they basically dictate to the cruise companies what they can do. I think as far as the cruise companies themselves are concerned, they would love to be back in the cruise business. Florida would like to have them back in the cruise business. You know, the idea of being able to sail, most of the cruises sail from Florida, okay? So this is the home port and the home destination for a lot of those things. So I don't think the cruise companies want to get on the good side of this. They should not want the vaccine passport. It's a stupid thing. It restricts, you know, all of your freedoms, you know, and the whole a cruise is travel, and the whole basis of the right to travel is so you can go on a cruise ship, you know, and you can go where you want. so it's ridiculous of them to push this, but it really comes down to that trade association, and I think they're more concerned with liability than they are actual health, which is usually the case, with most corporations that want masks. They want public relations. They don't want liability problems. They want to show that they're doing the right thing, you know, as opposed to the actual science of this. It's really noisy in your line today. I'm getting way too much coming across you.
Is this any better?
Well, it's much better. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, yeah, anyway, the cruise companies need to get rid of the vaccine passport. They need to get on the side of freedom and go with Florida and say, we join with Governor DeSantis. We don't want cruise passports either or vaccine passports either. That's what they should do rather than change
the problem is that the fact that these cruises go to different countries,
mm-hmm.
and if these other countries are requiring it, then they have no choice but to comply if they want to do this cruise. Otherwise, they won't be able to port.
Well, people, when you go to another country on a cruise ship, you're not technically admitted to that country. You don't go through customs. You don't go through immigration. You're not inspected. You have a cruise pass. And most of the times when you get off on a cruise ship, you're in a sort of like a designated, you know, tourist zone anyway. So there's ways around that, too. And I don't, you know, if most countries, if they want the tourist business, they should wise up too and say, no, we're not going to require this. First of all, the science is really clear. This is 99.97% fully recoverable with no, you know, lasting implications, especially under a certain age, you know, like what, 70 is where, you know, it's above 70. This thing starts to have real effect with people. Yeah, I know that's a large market for cruising, but they've got to get with the freedom. You know, if they get with freedom, they'll be a lot better off. If they start to be restrictive, they're going to have problems. And we do have a right to travel, whether the Supreme Court said it or not. No vaccine passports.
Well, you know, you're once again now you're getting into the open borders argument where because you're putting your foot down on foreign soil, and so that country does have the right to determine. If you, I don't care if it's designated as a tourist area or not,
mm-hmm.
but if you put your foot down on foreign soil, then that country has the right to determine if you're allowed to do that or not, and what the ground mm-hmm. rules are to do that.
Yeah, the cruise companies have the right not to go there. Then it becomes an economic
decision. Where are they going to go? Are they just going to cruise around the Atlantic in the middle of nowhere?
Well, assuming that all countries are going to do that. No, they're going to go to the places that are open to tourists that don't want to have a vaccine passport. And the other thing, the irony of this is if anybody wants to get a vaccine, nobody's stopping you. You know, what we're stopping is the mandatory proving that you can buy your birthright to travel back by getting a vaccine. That's what we're really arguing here. Okay.
And that's where I have the problem with it. And let's also remember a year ago, when mm-hmm. all of us conspiracy theorists were talking about the fact that we would have to have papers in order to travel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember last year, we all called it last year that they're, you know, just like the Jews, we were going to have papers in order to move around.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone
called
us conspiracy theorists. And now here we are with the passport vaccine that does not allow us to travel. And there's certain states that are not allowing us in right now.
No, when the states locked down, yeah, exactly right. When the states were banning other state citizens from going to their state or their own state citizens from leaving, which is also blatantly unconstitutional, too. You cannot stop Americans from going across state lines. The only thing you can do if someone's proven to be sick, yes, you can quarantine them then, but you can't quarantine asymptomatic or healthy people. You just can't do it. Okay, by law, by the Constitution. So we've been talking about that. I just found something interesting. I think it was Epoch Times or the Judicial Watch, or one of these places, was talking about how they've been talking about vaccine passports for quite a while. They talked about in Europe before Event 201. So this goes back to October of 2019. And I'm just putting all this evidence in my coronavirus timeline that the vaccine came out way before the virus. The virus was created for the vaccine. The passports were thought of years ago. The passports are a way to sell the vaccine. See, here's the thing. If you pull this all together, everything comes back to selling the vaccine. Demonizing hydroxychloroquine was to sell the vaccine. locking down and putting fear and maintaining the disease as long as possible was to sell the vaccine. Wearing masks was to create fear to sell the vaccine. You know, going to Wuhan to produce, you know, the coronavirus was done to sell the vaccine. Everything leads back to selling the vaccine. And if you look at it that way, it all makes sense. If you don't, all you see is a bunch of disjoint, you know, parts of something that you're not really sure what's going on. But everything leads to selling the vaccine. And the person behind it is the one and only Dr. Fascist, the most evil man on the planet. I'll stay for the record.
Well, he's the spokesperson behind it. He's the guy that you see at midnight yelling and screaming into the camera about how wonderful
Alex Jones,
you know, the new Slinky is or something. You know, the infomercial guy.
Oh,
yeah,
I mean, yeah,
that's
died.
All he is. Dr. Fascist, yeah, Dr. Fascist is nothing more than the infomercial guy.
I think you're wrong.
Yeah. I mean, no, he's just, right now, he's the salesperson behind it all. You got a big cabal outside of it between the Bilderberg, Bill Gates.
There is a world market in vaccines. I've got a report from the WHO back in 2014, boosting China as the new center of vaccine production. This has been in the planning for a long time. I remember when Dr. Fascist slipped during a press conference with the coronavirus task force under Trump, when he said, I talk to governors every day. I talk to governors all the time. Well, why would he have to talk to governors all the time? Why? Because he was coordinating the lockdowns. That's why. Okay. I can't prove it, but I'm pretty well assumed. When there was another organization that was reporting the stuff between, it was Worldview Weekend or something like that. It's a new website I've discovered, all right? And they were talking about all the communications that went back and forth between Dr. Fascist, Washington, and the Chinese Communist Party in May of 2020. Okay, now why would they do that? Well, that's the same month that Trump announced that he was taking hydroxychloroquine and it cures COVID, okay? So they had to get their story straight. They had to demonize hydroxychloroquine to sell vaccines. Everything comes back to selling vaccines. He's the point man. You know, Dr. Fascist, the WHO leader, the person, his representative in the Communist Party in China. This is all about selling vaccines and a worldwide market. That's what it all comes down to. And I proved that in my March 15 shows. He's a lot more dangerous than you think he is. He's not just a spokesman. He's not the Keitel Ronco guy. He's the Dr.
Keitel
Mengele.
Ronco.
Well, it's before your time, all right? Hey, for $19.95, you can get the latest new device here. It's wonderful. It slices, it dices, it cuts, it does everything you want. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So you know. So really, that's what I have for today.
Okay.
We finished a little bit earlier than I expected.
What's happened?
But yeah. Okay. Well, perfect timing. So I'm going to go get wet here and earn my dollar for today, and I will talk to you next week.
Okay. Well, dry off before next week, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks, Bill. We have so much fun here. I'll be right back. It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago. That yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. He walks the halls of justice. Pictures on the wall of great minds who advanced the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial, many times, that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts. It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley. And my little legal question before we get started here is I'm in Facebook jail. I've been censored, you know, because leftist trolls came on my page who I welcomed, let them say all kinds of invectives and horrible things about me, lying their butts off. And then they complain, they whine like little babies to Facebook and get me suspended for 30 days. So where's our censorship? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the sense when it comes to that, there's obviously no consistency. I've noticed this before, that the whoever is doing the censoring, which is a big question, is they're not, they don't look at the fact that the people attacking you violated the terms of service, 100 times, and then you just answered them. That
and I wasn't even nasty.
No role in,
yeah, and I never went on their pages either. I never commented. I never went to them and cast the same kind of lies and stuff like that. I welcome them on my page. I disagreed with them, pretty vigorously. But we never really got into personal attacks. Well, I didn't. But yeah, and so I'm going to change the whole Facebook thing. It's friends only. It's only friends can comment. If I don't know who you are, if you want to debate me, if you're a leftist, call the show. It's going to be your only option. Otherwise, I'm going to say what I damn well please on my site, and you're not going to get a chance to comment. And you did this to yourselves, you leftists, idiots. Sorry.
Well, you can, especially when you have that. That's an interesting perspective, because you do have the option normally of turning off commenting, which drives them crazy. And of course, people should understand this is, there's a new page for the president where, and it has a contact. You can send him a message. I don't know if he's going to actually read them all, but I was just sending them off. What I've said here, that, most people don't understand what's really going on here is that these are not random users. They are, this is their job, or their mission in life. They're not just, random people whose ears are soft and sensitive. This is their form of warfare.
Yeah.
And it's organized and it's consistent, and many times you'll find that the complaining users are actually the same person posting under like 5-10 different names. And their attacks are coordinated and intentional. Of course, when people think alike, it doesn't take very much to coordinate them.
Yeah.
But they are, nevertheless, that's the way they are. Well, let's see. So you were asking, what about your lawsuit, I guess?
My bill, too. But the lawsuit especially.
Yeah, I should take a
look. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, we need people for these bills, we need legislators who are, willing to put the country ahead of their own pride, their own ego, their own not invented here syndrome. Mm-hmm. It's a good idea, but it wasn't my idea, so therefore I don't care. that sort of thing. In fact, now I was going to say that people need to put on their seat belts, strap in, secure all loose items, because we have like 5 hours worth of stuff to do in half an hour here. So I'm going to bounce around here a bit, because one of the things is there's this wonderful legislator, and let me get his name. Well, that's what it turned out, in Georgia. And he, unfortunately, he's not a member of Congress, but he, where is this? I thought I printed that out. Anyway, so he,
you have more time too. You got 15 minutes into
Congress.
The next hour, so you got more time than you think you do. Yeah.
Right. Well, he's got, it goes fast. So he's got he's not a member of Congress, but he does have proposals. He wants to propose that I've got to get the exact names here. This is crazy.
That's okay.
But he wants Congress to enact laws to, and it's just tongue-in-cheek. And again, this is where we understand the game we're playing here, is that he wants to have a law in Congress instead of H.R. 1 that makes all the laws the same as Delaware for voting.
Yeah, tell me about that. I didn't get a chance to read it all, but yeah.
And he wants another one that is based upon New York, because remember, the majority leader of the Senate now is Chuck Schumer from New York. So he wants to put this. The problem, though, is that, again, we don't have a problem with good ideas. We have a lack of anyone to work on them.
So my point is, and that's the thing. So he is a state legislator in Georgia trying to get some new members of Congress to introduce these. So I need to try to find the name. So that's an interesting thing. But the point is that we need, you know, you have good bills. We don't have good legislators.
Yeah.
That's our problem. And,
well, I'm working on a bigger microphone. I'm working on – I've got some new contacts that I will talk about on the air as soon as I can. But it looks like, you know, some folks are starting to take notice of what we're doing here, and they're pretty happy with it, especially those concerned with radio and the future of talk radio. And so there's some really good things in the works. The bigger, you know, our voice gets, the more impact we're going to have. I've always known that. You know, the legislation is not something that's designed to be passed immediately so much as it's an education tool. It's to show what is possible if Congress and the state legislatures, you know, really do their job. You look at most of the bills coming out, they're tinkering. They'll take one little aspect of the problem and try and correct it, but they never get the overall. And what I try to do with the bills that we have coming out of Action Radio at writeyourlaws.com is to have a fundamental, comprehensive solution where you don't have to keep revisiting it, you know, with tinkering. Every time there's a new Congress. So that, I think, our approach is much more comprehensive and much more thorough because of it. We just need the bigger microphone.
Well, the thing is that it's like with Americans for Tax Reform. They came up with the pledge many decades ago, and they tried to get candidates in upcoming elections to take the pledge that they would not raise taxes. So if it starts to become, you know, if you say, would you support this? You know, who is going to support this in the next election? Are they going to, you know, the incumbents and others? Then during a primary, especially, it becomes a competition. After they get elected, they thumb their nose at the voters and laugh and say, ah, you suckers. you voted for me. I'm in for another 2 years. But, you know, in the run-up to the election, like, for example, here in Virginia, everybody is trying to say that they're the Trump supporter, they're the conservative, even those who are not, even those who are on Fox News trashing Trump a few years ago. Everybody's a conservative in the Republican primary before the election, you know, before the primary election is held. Then they pivot, swing around, and stab us in the back. So the point is that everybody has to compete to show that they really care about what the American people care about. And in fact, I was surveyed about a week ago on the issues that I care most about in Virginia. I answered high-tech censorship because I figure everything else. And sure enough, the guy with most of the money immediately came out with a TV ad saying what he's going to do as governor about high-tech censorship because
what can they do?
That's what people care about.
What are they going
to
do,
though? Well, they could do a lot. We talked about it.
Well, I mean, Indiana's investigating big tech censorship, and Texas said they're going to have a huge fines if anybody does anything with big tech censorship. And I got a quote from the article. It's in the Epoch Times. And the Texas measure, the headline is it's going to ban big tech censorship, but it actually says this measure would require companies to make their moderation policies known, which I think they already do, publish reports about the content blocked out by the platform. Well, that doesn't do anything. And create an appeals process for the removed content. Well, they already have that too. I know, but the appeals process doesn't work because they've rigged it against you. So even though they're doing these laws, this particular one in Texas is going to have no effect, and I have no idea what the Indiana Attorney General is going to be able to accomplish either, unless you do either national. I think this has to be national because the big tech companies are national and international too. Poland has done it. Poland has actually fined these companies millions of dollars for censoring Polish citizens. That's where we need to go.
Right. Right. And I think, well, I think as we talk here, I think that we can – there are a variety of ways, and it's like the most – if people want to understand politics, they should get the series from the BBC from the 80s, Yes, Prime Minister. And they talk – they show what the bureaucrats are doing behind the scenes. You know, for example, they advise it can't be done. It's, you know, it's designed – you know, it can't be done if you do it the way we recommend. You know, there's nothing that can be done as long as we design it so that there's nothing that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually want to do it then there are ways to do it. But so the thing is that as I talked about, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act is, mm-hmm. number one, vague and poorly defined. And so I would have a state go ahead and define it and say, you know, we are totally on board with Section 230, and here's what it means, because the office in Congress failed to explain what these terms mean. And secondly, it's being vastly misinterpreted by the courts. And so putting a state law up against – so this is what happens, like, with immigration we talked about. You want to talk about the 14th Amendment at some point, about the ability to stop immigration. But the thing is that a statute passed by Congress preempts state laws. A policy issued out of the Oval Office, especially if it's in conflict with congressional law, does not preempt anything. It's just a personal, it's just your personal opinion. And so the misinterpretation of Section 230 is not binding, but you have to confront the judges, especially with a growing majority of public opinion. You have to, by passing a state law saying, oh, by the way, this is what Section 230 means in the state of Florida. Yes, there'll
be better
challenges.
I get a better idea. I replace Section 230. I'm going to pull up my bill right now, because what I do, what Section 230 does, is it talks about, good faith efforts to curb offensive speech. Well, what the big tech companies have done is they've run wild with that. Let's see if I can get the actual one. Here's current law. It says no provider or user or okay. No provider or user of interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, and here's the bad part, or otherwise objectionable. Well, that can mean anything anybody wants, whether or not such material is constitutionally protected, or, and then they go on. But that's the thing. So in other words, as long as you're making a good faith effort and you find stuff otherwise objectionable, you can censor anything you want. That's in Section 230. My Section 230 provides for a wall of separation such that there is no liability immunity against big tech if they touch in any way. If they violate the wall of separation, I use those words purposely from Jefferson, between the providers and the users. Even if what the user is posting is illegal, all they can do is contact the authorities, let them do it, and preserve that for evidence for future trial. Then, once there's a conclusion, that content can be taken down. But unless you have provided this is what my bill does, an absolute wall of separation between the providers and the users, identical to the wall of separation between people who talk on a landline on a phone, used to, with AT&T, and this is from Mike Huckabee. This is where I got the idea. Mike Huckabee said that AT&T used to rent you the phone equipment. They didn't care what you said. They didn't police what you said. They had no impact on what you said. They didn't even know what you said. They didn't care, and that's the way it has to be with interactive computer services, and that's, so Section 230 has to be replaced with what I think is a better version that would create that wall of separation. And if they violate it, they're open to lawsuit. That's the protection.
Yeah, but the thing is, you have to get that through Congress, and you have to get the president to sign it.
Yeah, oh, I
and,
know.
And now, as I said, some of the laws that you're talking about, some things that you've done there, if you challenge candidates in the primary, especially on the Republican side, say, will you support this bill if you're elected to Congress? And you get them to, and of course, candidates, scream bloody murder and stomp like a child and flip-flop like a fish on a dock, because they don't want them to be constrained. But the whole point, the reason why the tax cut movement was so successful is because, I can't remember his name, Grover Norquist, how could I forget?
No, I actually talked to him. He was on my show.
American.
Yeah, he was on with me once at WBY, yeah.
So when he he came up with this pledge, And with conservative media on our side, he would any Republican primary candidate who wouldn't take the pledge, was the kiss of death, because it was understood that if they didn't if they wouldn't take the pledge not to raise taxes, it was because they were going to raise taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the wake of George H.W. Bush and his famous thing.
Read my lips. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then he raised taxes. And this has been going on forever, is that, you know, the bottom line is that, politicians lie, especially Rhino Republicans.
Yeah.
And it's not the fact that I disagree with them on policy. It's the flagrant lying to my face that I object to.
Oh, yeah. This is where the whole Rhino thing came from. But just before you go to the next issue, I just want to say that part of the reason for citizen legislation is when Congress says we're doing the best we can, we don't have a solution, we're working on it. You know, citizens can say, well, we have a solution. It's right here. You know pass this.
That's
or
right.
At least consider this or put it in hearing. And it reverses the flow of legislation. Instead of them dictating to us, we can say, yeah, go ahead.
And for example, in Yes, Prime Minister, which I take the time to go off on the tangent because if somebody watches the whole series, they'll learn so much. There's this one thing where there's a foreign policy problem that their version of the State Department doesn't want to get involved in because they don't want to anger Muslim oil interests and things. And so they advise that to do nothing and there's nothing that can be done. And the Prime Minister, who has his own agenda as a politician, finds a way to get it done. And the bureaucrats are furious. And at one point they say, like, well, it would have been impossible if they'd taken our advice. So the idea is that you know, we advised that it was impossible and here he's done it.
Yeah.
And
well, that's a metaphor
for
Trump. That's Trump right there. You know, so I got to watch this Yes Prime Minister series. It sounds like fun. But yeah, that's Trump did all the things that they said couldn't be done. We're writing legislation that they say can't be written. So this is why I'm hoping to connect with Trump. In fact, there's some Save America summit going on today, isn't there? That we should be at.
Oh, I don't know.
I heard about it.
I've missed that.
Yeah, go ahead.
So no, but the thing is that I do believe that by showing them, here's how you can do this. Will you commit to this? If you're in Congress, will you co-sponsor it? And if you're a candidate, will you commit to it? Helps pry them out of their fog, you know, the fog they want to live in that they can pretend to be a conservative and they're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do think it. So anyway, shall we talk about Clarence Thomas?
Let's do. Yes.
And
I
this is very much in line with this.
Yeah.
This is very much in line with this. So Larry Klayman at Freedom Watch for Laura Loomer sued the social media over some of these same things, and her case was dismissed for some of the same reasons we're discussing, and it was appealed. Larry Klayman appealed it up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court just this week. Last week, denied.
Are you still there?
Yeah, it's a very powerful.
You just cut out
still
for
there?
A second. Yeah, you just cut out for a second. That's why I repeated, you know, the yes, Mr. Prime Minister, because that word got cut out too. Occasionally, we lose little things, but I just like to fill in the gaps for folks so they know what happens.
I have no idea why that is.
That's okay. It just happens. I listen to the
I'm
podcast.
I'm not in Afghanistan.
Yeah, sometimes the
I'm not in the mountains of Afghanistan.
Yeah. No, you're fine. You're fine now.
I'm in the shadow of the nation's capital, and I shouldn't. This is ridiculous. But anyway, what the Supreme Court decided not to take the case, which means they don't explain. Usually, it's not a final decision. It's just now we don't want to do that. And, you know, it's only the First Amendment, right? And it's only a raging controversy going on all over the country.
This is their modus operandi to not take cases that are critical.
That's right. And the problem is, they're too busy taking cases that have nothing to do with the Constitution.
Yeah.
And they're very, very busy taking cases that are like, you know, of minor importance to do something that has to do with defending the Constitution and defending our democracy and preserving our country. Those are not those things don't interest them. If you actually look at their calendar and all the little things about, you know, some trademark case or some business dispute or something like that. They're too busy doing those things to then to defend all of our rights and deal with everything that we're dealing with. So Thomas, the thing is, when the Supreme Court does not take a case, many times justices will provide a dissent, as they did in the election case earlier, and they can explain their points of view. But it's not the decision of the court, and they can't do it. Now, Clarence Thomas is very mild-mannered to begin with, and he is he often does not speak up during oral argument, and he's a strong conservative, but he's not a bomb thrower when it comes to his language. So here he comes out with this discussion, and it's more like a law review article. It's not the decision of the court. I wish it were. But he's clearly saying that the law has to change. And I am going to work on a lawsuit that maybe I can use to follow with you against Facebook and these things, and argue that, you know, one of the Supreme Court justices has analyzed in detail that the law needs to change. Now, Facebook has an ad up, especially on my streaming services, about how the law hasn't changed in 25 years and a lot of things have changed. I don't know why in the world they're doing that, because it feeds into the argument, yeah, we need to further regulate the Internet because changed in 25 years. Somehow they think that this works in their favor, but it doesn't. So what he says is very clearly is he makes, although he doesn't come out, you know, really bomb-throwing strong, he's inviting a completely different view of the First Amendment of citizens on the Internet, on social media, and he's making it clear that the law needs to evolve. And the way it would evolve is something called a common carrier. Now, a common carrier traditionally was a carrier. They'd actually carry freight and things like that. So, and as somebody who was pointing out that, I think Buttigieg was saying that trains used to be new, and now they're taken for granted as being infrastructure. You know, there was a time, not more than 100 years ago, when cars were new, and we didn't have highways everywhere. Maybe we had highways for horses and things, but you know, now we consider critical infrastructure something that 120 years ago about was new. And this is happening with social media and the Internet. We're depending upon it. And there are laws that don't apply to everybody else that do apply to common carriers. Because of their critical nature, they're often monopolistic or close to monopolistic in the law as their justification. And so Clarence Thomas goes through an exhaustive analysis, not a decision, because he was the only one writing it. The other eight justices were probably, you know, out, I don't know, like,
cowards.
Get in trouble for saying something, but hell they were doing.
I'll say it.
Yeah, you could say it. As a lawyer, I'll get in trouble for saying what everybody is thinking. But the
on Facebook, but you know, yeah.
But so anyway, so he's writing alone. So he's writing as suggestions, but he makes a very strong case how the law has to change. How social media is clearly becoming a common carrier. It is clearly depended upon by everybody, and the and it is clearly intertwined with government. I mean, Section 230.
Well, this
now,
is the argument
if
I made.
Government.
This is exactly the argument I made in my lawsuit with public accommodation, that the information superhighway of today is identical to the state highways, you know, during segregation, where Black Americans couldn't travel because they couldn't go to restaurants, couldn't stay in hotels, couldn't use public restrooms, couldn't do all kinds of things that are absolutely essential for travel, and travel is essential for commerce, and commerce is essential for life. So, and the other argument is ideology, using ideology as a protected civil right, everybody as much as skin color, because it's ideology that's the basis of discrimination today. It's the modern segregation. And so I have these exact arguments, what, a year and a half, you know, sometimes 2 years ago, I'm thinking of this. It's all my lawsuit. Public accommodation is directly the same thing he's talking about as common carrier, using the phone line argument that Mike Huckabee used. You know, it's the same argument that we are dependent on this. This is part of our infrastructure, and for them to limit it, you know, just because they want to decide what it is absurd. And they're not, you know, they are common carriers. They're not publishers, you know, and they should be liable if they touch, you know, anything that anybody says, regardless of how criminal it is, because we have criminal statutes to deal. If someone puts child pornography on, you know, that's illegal. That's up to law enforcement to go after those people. That's not up to the provider. The provider should have nothing to do with it. In fact, like I said before, they should preserve that simply because to preserve the evidence. And what if the provider is censoring things that should not be censored? You need to preserve that too. So all this is in my lawsuit,
right,
in my Section 231 bill. So I hate to say that, you know, Clarence Thomas is listening to Action Radio, but quite frankly, it'd be great if he did because we're already talking about this.
Well, he
stuff.
Might.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
And, you know, Larry Klayman is taking credit for his brief being, you know, influencing Thomas's dissent.
Yeah.
But
maybe my lawsuit
influenced
Larry Klayman.
That,
who knows? That'd be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So so the thing is that they he's clearly both indicating an openness to a change in the law. He is sending a shot across the bow to get the discussion going in this direction. But like you say, it's true that they. Here's what I was going to say: is that it's more than just our dependence upon it when the government has given them immunity. So they're now now chartered to some extent by the government. Indeed, many of these politicians defending 230 portray it as exactly that, is that giving this immunity was necessary to stimulate this growth of the internet and the social media.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen closely to the language they're using, they're basically admitting that the government has largely chartered this growth. In fact, the internet started by DARPA, which is an agency of the Defense Department.
Yeah, it was part of our missile defense. Yeah.
So the thing is that there is a government entanglement with Facebook and Twitter and the freedom of the internet. That matters because they will say that the First Amendment protects against discrimination by the government. So if it's a completely private issue, they'll say that it doesn't apply like that. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't other things. For example, here in Virginia, it would be an unfair trade practice. It would be a deceptive trade practice what they're doing because they're, you know, they're saying, you know, like for example, suppose you lease you lease an apartment, and then the landlord says, oh, by the way, my mother-in-law is coming to town and she has to stay in the. And he said, no, wait a minute, I leased the apartment. You know, different things. So what they're doing is they're promising you one thing and then they are changing the deal. So it's an unfair trade practice, breach of contract, as well as other issues like that.
See, I like the idea of immunity for the providers. I think they should be immune because they should not have any responsibility for what people post on their on the service they provide. On the other hand, if they touch what people are producing on their sites, then they lose their immunity. So you have to make the immunity conditional. That's the way to go about it. The immunity is not a bad thing, but they made it, you know, good faith. They made it, you know, material that you think otherwise objectionable, and they left it to the providers to decide what was objectionable rather than actual technical law enforcement if someone's actually committing a crime. That's the problem. That's why I provide a wall of separation between provider and user. That would solve the situation. We got Pianca in the line, too. I want to get him in the conversation real quick as well, and then we shall continue. Pianca,
okay.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm going to speak fast because I'm having a circuit breaker problem here.
Oh,
but
okay.
Jonathan made mention of the great Clarence Thomas and his lack of giving verbal opinion was something he grew up as a child. He was speaking a language of the Gullah people, Geechee, and it has a dialect that people can't understand. So he just remains quiet many times. So that is where that originated from.
Well, interesting.
He talks about it. Yeah.
Can we talk to him, Jonathan? Can we reach a Supreme Court justice and say, hey, you know, we know where you're going with this, but, you know, have you considered A, our lawsuit, and B, our bill on Section 230?
It would depend on the circumstance, especially if you are a litigant. It would probably be improper unless you. I mean, there are ways to do it. Like, for example, the amicus, we could, if there's a case that's still pending, we can file an amicus curiae brief. I don't know if, you know, and as we did, as Action Radio and other groups did already, I mean, you can always write a letter, but technically if someone is in court, one is supposed to not communicate with a judge only. I mean, if you send something to the judge and the other parties in the case.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but if we got in court, you'd have, that's why it depends.
Yeah. But if we're out of court, you know, I just wonder if there's a way to communicate.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you're supposed to, the problem is especially for an attorney, if you don't share it with everybody. I mean, you can send a letter to the court.
It's public. Right. Everything, and I'll make it public. My lawsuit was public. It was an open letter. When I called DeSantis a dictator for locking us down at the beginning of the coronavirus last year, that was an open letter. I openly published it. I don't hide stuff, you know, because you know, there's nothing I'm hiding here. I want people to look at it and take a look. But I'm just wondering, because I remember Justice Alito spoke before, I think, the Federalist Society, you know, several months ago, talking about the loss of our constitutional rights because of the lockdown. I remember when Justice Scalia was alive. This is back maybe 10, 15 years ago. He used to be part of this panel. They had this like super panel of the biggest, you know, government, corporate, you know, officials. And there'd be like 10 or 15 people on this panel. And he used to be one of them. And people were openly asking questions about all kinds of stuff. And these guys give interviews occasionally too. So I know there is some kind of public access to Supreme Court justices. I just want to talk to them, you know, on behalf of Action Radio, because I think our ideas are further ahead than even they have. And I think we might be able to do some good here, you know, and same thing with Congress, to be able to advance both our Section 230 bill and my lawsuit, which uses ideology, the protection of that as a civil right and public accommodation. It's right there. It's exactly what he's talking about. Slightly different name.
Yeah.
No, you're posting.
Same idea. Bianchi?
Your posting of that bill, is that what you had problems with on Facebook? If so, give me a copy of it. I'm going to post it too.
WriteYourLaws.com. That's where you go for all our bills. WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. No, that wasn't it. The thing that got me in trouble was posting a comment outing a fake leftist, and they didn't like that, you know. And but I never posted on their page. I never harassed them. I never did anything. The other one is I posted a story in the Wuhan lab. In fact, I'll pull it up right now. So, Jonathan, I don't know if you want to talk. Oh, it's not my Save America Summit. That's a different thing. I'll find it real quickly. Yeah, I have the same problem you do. It's like once I get stuff going in the show, it moves around. So I can't.
But just message me. You can still message even though you're in jail.
Yeah, I can. Well, I just tell you right now, it's our communications bill. But the thing that that got me in trouble with Facebook in terms of posting was a story on the Wuhan lab, how Dr. Fascist had spent $600 million on gain-of-function research. And how it was not approved. The latest is it was not approved by the NIH, the National Institute for Health. Well, of course not. Dr. Fascist found a back way to get it there. That's the story. And in the appeal, I didn't take a screenshot of it, unfortunately, but they said, you know, we've repeatedly debunked all these stories. You know, the coronavirus is real, da, 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 da. And they went on about this nonsense. But that was my initial 7-day suspension. And then they got this other comment. And then they reviewed my stuff and said, well, we're going to give you 30 days now. But it was originally, the story was the Wuhan lab. Oh, here it is.
Well, you know, what you said is absolutely true. This idea, Facebook is just like I'm talking on a warp line right now. Mm-hmm. You know what a warp line is, voice over internet protocol. This is a carrier. It's a carrier. Facebook has became a carrier also. And their idea of they're going to censor you, going to lock you up if you say something or repeatedly say it that they don't like. And that there is totally wrong. It's sort of like what you see now with the Major League Baseball telling Atlanta legislature, even though you have constitutional authority to make the changes that you're doing, we don't like them. And we're not going to entertain you. We're going to put our entertainment someplace else. The place that they want to go to, that city should say, look, we don't like what you've done to Atlanta. We don't want you here.
Yeah. Yeah, Jonathan, it's an interesting point.
I think so, yeah. And I think that's where we're heading. I mean, the fact that it's made it all the way up to a Supreme Court justice who's not known for, I mean, he's a strong believer, but he tends to sit back and keep his own counsel. The fact that it's gotten up to this point means that the discussion is moving in this direction. And if somebody wants to argue for a change in the law, you can say, look, here's a Supreme Court justice saying that this has to happen.
They can't make policy.
You know, it's not a crazy idea.
That's kind of beyond their thing. Hmm. What about this? It's beyond their policy. They can't make policy. I mean, I don't even know if they can lobby for policy. I don't know what the extent of what they can and can't do is. But I want to go to Bianchi's point about the whole idea of these corporations, you know, shuffling around city to city, you know, and they're saying that we don't respect your bill. We don't care. And I don't think they've even read it. But the idea of corporations, you know, making or trying to influence policy so overtly, I just find that quite fascinating. I mean, they can do it. But it's kind of stupid.
It is. Well, maybe. I mean, to me, it's very shocking, and it's very Third Reich-ish, if I could say. Remember, socialism and, I mean, you know, fascism is left wing because it's government control over society. It's government strangling, like the companies in the rise of Germany's Third Reich were in bed with the government, with the part. Well, really, no. I mean, people will say that there's a difference between the party and the government. Like in the Soviet Union, they say the action was in the party, not in the government. The government was just the lapdog of the party. And these companies in the Third Reich were joined at the hip with the party. For their own cowardly, short-term self-interest, you know, unable to see where this was going. So why in the world are companies being involved in politics at all? That, I think, should shock us. Why does Coca-Cola have any opinion about anything political? They're
corporate lobbyists all the time who are doing that. Archer Daniels Midland controls ethanol policy in this country because they make money off it. I define lobbying as commerce. In fact, I even have a bill on this. Go ahead.
It's like the National Education Association lobbying about things that have absolutely nothing to do with schools and education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's some trademark law that threatens the release of their secret recipe, you know, I could see them lobbying about something that deals with their business, but just general politics, it's none of, you know, they shouldn't be involved. And what I would say, in fact, I already sent it to this contact place for Donald Trump, is that shareholders of Coca-Cola and these other companies, I don't know if there's anything equivalent for the Major League Baseball, should sue because they're putting something other than the shareholders' interests ahead of making money for the shareholders.
Yeah.
And that's not just an idle thing. It's because the board of directors and the officers have a fiduciary duty, which is a very strong concept in the law, a very high hurdle. They have a fiduciary duty to the shareholders. So they can't just go off and say, you know, we want to spend money on our president of Coca-Cola running for office or something, the president wants to make his wife a model, so we're going to spend Coca-Cola treasury funds to put billboards all over America, you know, exalting the president's wife, or the president of Coca-Cola. That is a breach of fiduciary duty.
Mm-hmm.
And making decisions that hurt or could hurt the share price for some other purpose that has nothing to do with selling soft drinks is a breach of
the remedy,
fiduciary
though.
Duty to their suckles.
No, I agree with you. That's the proper remedy. I wouldn't stop corporations from lobbying or taking out, you know, million-dollar ads or anything like that, or moving town or canceling events. I mean, that's their prerogative. I don't object to that because, you know, corporations lobby just like people lobby. It's free speech to me. And economically, they can make their own decisions. But the remedy is exactly as you say. It's not for the government to regulate whether corporations – well, they can register them, things like that. But it's not for them to ban them from lobbying. I would have full disclosure. I would have how much money is being spent. I would treat them, you know, as they do with, as registered lobbyists, but I wouldn't stop them from lobbying at all. But it's the shareholders. It's their responsibility to say to the company, we don't want you doing this. And I agree with you on the fiduciary responsibility. And if they want to sue, that's the remedy. It's not a government remedy. It's already there in the private sector in the legal process to handle it. That's where it should be done.
And even Facebook, for example, mm-hmm. I looked at this, many of the shareholders are themselves institutional investment companies. They have a fiduciary duty too. So if large amounts of the stock are owned by institutional investors, meaning they invest on behalf of the little people, they take their money and collect it and invest it as a company professionally, they may have a duty to sue. Not only could they sue, but they would be violating their fiduciary duty if they didn't sue. And the thing is, for example, if Facebook starts getting hit out of Poland with 75, you know, $1 million fines or some of the states,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the shareholders have a right to say, look, now I don't think he's a majority, but he's the largest. He's a plurality shareholder, Mark Zuckerberg. You know, if he is pursuing these partisan politic games, and mm-hmm. the share price goes down, again, that is not pursuing the interests of the shareholders. And the shareholders are there to make money, providing a platform that people want to use and sell ads. It's not and it is in just dollar terms. So if he wants to reshape society and censor conservatives, and shareholders are hurt, the shareholders can sue the leadership of Facebook. And the institutional investors who hold most of the stock are required to sue to vindicate, you know, if their clients lose money because they start having to pay out huge fines to Texas and Florida and Poland and North Dakota and other places like that, you know, they could throw out the leadership of Facebook.
That's an interesting thought. I want to get to Claire on the conversation. We'll get to her report in just a couple of minutes here. But especially in terms of Poland and international reactions to big tech. Claire, are you familiar with what's going on there? And do you know any other countries that are taking action to protect their folks from citizenship?
I have seen what Poland is doing. I don't know of any other country right now that's taken those steps, but bravo, Poland.
Yeah. Well, that'd be a good bill for us to submit under model legislation to Congress, although I think somebody has. Jonathan, do you know if anybody's actually taken the Poland bill?
Suppose you're Poland. And I think the Ukraine was in a fight with Twitter over their election. And you can vindicate something you think is important, and you could also, like, you know, get millions of dollars into your own economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if, you know, that's kind of like, well, other countries are going to go say, hey, why don't we get in on that too? Why don't we start getting $1 million fines paid by Facebook and Twitter and these other people? So it if anyone can break, first of all, they get the idea and they can break the cowardice thing. They could start saying, hey, you know, here's a way to get money to our people at the expense of billionaires. Why not? So
yeah.
it I think it could rapidly grow is what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
If it starts to work.
I still want to get our bill out there, the one on Section 230, my lawsuit. I'd love to get Clarence Thomas's opinion of those if we can reach him at all. And I think that we just have stronger cases and stronger laws than anybody else in Congress is coming up with. And on that note,
well,
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to play Claire's theme, which I forgot last week, and we're sort of merged into the intelligence report. But there's a bunch of things. And Jonathan, if you have any other last minute things you want to do, we'll cover that too. But we'll be right back.
The movies have James Bond, but we have Claire Lopez. Does she drive an Aston Martin, fly to resorts on the French Riviera, and chase bad guys like Ernst Stavro Blofeld and Goldfinger? No, but she was a career officer with the CIA. Claire is an expert on the former Soviet Union, Central and Eastern Europe, and the Balkans. She speaks Spanish, Bulgarian, French, German, Russian, and is studying Farsi. Claire is documenting the cabal of the Muslim Brotherhood, Black Lives Matter, and Antifa.
She is also describing how China is turning us into yet another property owned by the Chinese Communist Party. And now, Claire Lopez with the Intelligence Report on Action Radio. Yeah, it starts off funny, but it really does give all your qualifications, which are quite amazing. So that's why I like it. But if you object to it, I can always make you another theme. But I kind of like that. It gets us in the mood to talk about stuff.
You do definitely do credit to my bio. I thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, I'll keep the theme then. Jonathan, did you have anything else you wanted to cover real quick? Delve into other issues here.
Just a few seconds. I'll say maybe what we should do is take your bill and put it in a friend of the court brief to somebody.
Ooh, wouldn't that be great?
Appropriate case.
Yeah, it's right there. It's the number two bill after the first one is getting product liability back onto the vaccine manufacturers. And then there's the Section 230 bill. And then there's my FDA reform, which would open the FDA up to hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and other things so they can stop this genocide that they're on so they can sell vaccines. Those are three very important bills. And those are the ones I've given to some people that are really starting to take an interest in what we're doing. So stick around, folks. We're going to be a major force in this country one day. Anyway, yeah. Thanks, Jonathan.
I'll just listen here. I'll go ahead and listen here.
Come on back when you feel like it. Claire, good to have you back. Where do you want to start with Wuhan or any other issues that you want to get to? We've got to the rest of the show, so let's have at it. What's going on?
Oh, well, it's good to be back with you. Thanks again. And, there's just an awful lot going on right now. The border, the virus, et cetera. It's kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about prepping for the show. I just wake up and go, let me pick the first five stories on Epic Times and Breitbart and, some of the other places I go, and it's like it's all there. But I try and tie them together. I try and make sense of the stories and try and create a pattern. And what I find interesting, and this is something, let's get into the Wuhan lab here a little bit, but everybody seems to be focusing on the origin of the coronavirus, and I think that's a mistake. I suggested it to a couple of folks yesterday that the really interesting story, the real key to this is not the origin of the virus, because I think the virus was created to market the vaccine. The really interesting story is the origin of the vaccine, which came years earlier with that TED talk with Dr. Zaks from Moderna that said, we've hacked the software of life. We can use a computer to create a vaccine, because they basically use computer models, those same models that said, 2 million Americans were going to die and all this other kind of stuff. But they're using models, the same models that give you global warming and seas rising 20 feet. They're using computers to create genetic code. And what could go wrong, right? Well, we see what can go wrong with the results of the vaccine. But the vaccine is the key. Everything leads back to the vaccine. Demonizing hydroxychloroquine so it wouldn't stop the pandemic. Changing the guidelines so you could do a lockdown with no pandemic severity index. That was the 2007 guidelines. The event 201, discussing how to stop, information they didn't want on their pandemic. The fear, the lockdowns, the masks, closing the beaches, keeping people at home, all the things that would promote the pandemic as opposed to, slow the spread, actually increase the spread. And, all these things tie into the sale of the vaccines. This is where I think we should be looking, and the origin of the vaccine rather than the virus. But since you've looked into the virus, what do you got? What have you found out? I'm curious.
Well, I think it's incredibly important that we trace back accurately where this virus came from, because we know that the Chinese Communist Party manages a sprawling network of biological warfare, of a program, a biological warfare program, a sprawling network of labs, research facilities, mostly under the control of the People's Liberation Army. That's their military, the Ministry of Defense there. And the reason that this is so important is because this is not the only virus, this is not the only pandemic that is possible coming out of these labs. Vaccines may or may not even have any effect on what is to come. If they are able, using artificial intelligence, platforms like CRISPR, the genetic, modification, manipulation, technology that they apparently now have mastered. Vaccines may or may not be relevant, depending on what they are able to do with the genomic sequence, manipulating the genomic sequence of these viruses, which is apparently what they have done with this particular coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2 is its actual name. So holding China accountable for this one, finding out what it did with this one so that it can be held responsible in its, for example, signatory status to the Biological Weapons Convention, which, yes, it's a signatory, if you can possibly imagine.
Of course they are.
To be held accountable for these things going forward, because vaccines will have no meaning if they are able to genetically manipulate the genomic sequence of viruses such that they play around with them in ways that may not be able to be defeated.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. I wasn't trying to diminish that aspect, which I'm glad you brought it up because I hadn't really thought about it, because my investigations are working on the connections between, you know, Dr. Fascist and the WHO and China, which I have an article stating in 2014 that the World Health Organization wanted to promote China as the premier, you know, source of vaccines worldwide. So they've been in this business a while. And I always think that things happen a lot earlier than we suspect. You just hear about them now. So if it did, the work that they're doing beyond that, was that, again, funded by U.S. taxpayers? Is there a connection there? Were they using our technology? Did they steal our technology? You know, is Dr. Fascist, who I believe is the premier vaccine, salesperson in the world, did he work with China back in May 2020 when they were talking all the time? I just read a report that there's a whole lot of communication between the U.S. and China in May of 2020, the same month that Trump declared that he was taking hydroxychloroquine, because that would have stopped their pandemic and stopped their vaccine. I mean, like I say, I focus on this more, but it looks like China's gone above and beyond that into these bioweapons. And so it seems to me it's like nuclear war. What, if you kill an entire nation, that's your enemy, what have you gained? Because there's nothing there.
Right, but the point is not, I believe at this point, with China's biological weapons program to kill entire populations. No, rather it is to debilitate them so much with fear and with their own tyrannical impulses, which we've seen across the United States and the world, to lock down economies, to destroy themselves. That is far more effective than just killing everybody. We've done this to ourselves, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But triggered,
but that's our failing.
By the fear of this unknown virus.
Yeah.
Indeed, the United States government, from the Health and Human Services Department of the Cabinet in the Obama years, began the funding, which went through a clearinghouse, I guess you might say, EcoHealth Alliance, which then itself subdivided grants out to various recipients to include, of course, the National Institutes of Health and its department, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, headed up by Dr. Anthony Fauci. Subdivided, and some of that went to the gain of function studies that involved the Wuhan Institute of Virology and their scientists, including the woman known as Bat Lady or Bat Woman, Xi Jing Li, who was working with Dr. Ralph Barrick at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill on these gain of function studies. We know this because they published their papers. They're in English. They're online. So, I mean, there's a wide network here of involvement. It's not just Anthony Fauci. I mean, he's one player in the overall scheme of things. But this is a much bigger network of operations than just one man could ever be.
I agree with you there. Obama administration. I think he's part of Yeah, he's part of that network with the WHO, with China, with the other vaccine manufacturers,
yeah,
with Big Pharma. You know, they're all in this. Every country has their own Dr. Fascist, as I call him. And Dr. Zelenko is the one that told me about that. And Patrick Woods, who does Technocracy. So they're out there. This is a worldwide effort by technocrats.
Well, level of public health, it is a global, interconnected network of people and institutions and labs and universities and so forth. But it's a very complicated picture when we look at what happened with the United States funding. And that is that even during the Obama administration, they became so alarmed at the gain-of-function studies being conducted that they halted the funding.
Mm-hmm.
And then for whatever reason, and however, I'm not even completely sure about how, the funding got turned back on again.
Yeah,
then,
I know how.
Health and Human Services allowed it to go forward again through
they
the National
They snuck it by Trump. They didn't tell Trump. They just did it on their own. That's what's been
and
reported.
And then President Trump realized what was going on, and he stopped it again. And this was in early 2017 or so that it got turned back on, and then he turns it back off in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, on, off, but in the end, it almost doesn't even matter, you know, how much the United States put into it, because there's so much other funding globally, going into these kinds of studies, including by China itself, of course, its own, mm-hmm. you know, network of biological warfare programs.
Hmm. Yeah, I've heard something. I don't know if you've heard this also, but there have been experiments, animal experiments done with some of these, the modern mRNA, messenger RNA vaccines that are coming out. They're not even vaccines, they're genetic modification things, where the animals, once they get out in nature and encounter wild coronaviruses, you know, and variants of them, we always hear about the variants now, these animals are dying. And
yeah,
so the effect is it's a twofold effect. It's the virus plus the vaccine that is the most deadly. So if you don't get the vaccine, it's like you're not getting the full component. If it's just the virus and you've got a good immune system, you know, you're 99.97%, you know, assured of being just fine, even if you have, you know, mild symptoms. But if you combine the two, and this is the big danger that I fear, it's the effects that are coming later, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year down the line, of people that are getting the vaccine now, that they're back out in the environment when the next round of the coronavirus comes by. Those of us with natural immunity, we should be, unless you're, you know, old, obese, diabetes, or any of the other, you know, comorbidities, should be just fine, even if we get sick. The people that have had the vaccine, they've got that extra component. They've got that weakened immune system because of the vaccine. This is what it looks like. And they're more susceptible to dying from the virus when it comes around again. I mean, look how many people are testing positive for coronavirus after getting the vaccine when they're supposedly fully, you know, immunized. It's not true. Go ahead.
It's not that their immune systems are weakened by the vaccine, in air quotes.
Okay.
It's that their genetic coding, their DNA, affected by the messenger RNA, has been so manipulated inside the body that mm-hmm. it may overreact the next time the body encounters a coronavirus or one of its mutations. Because, I mean, this is what viruses do. They mutate.
Mm-hmm.
This is simply absolutely normal. Viruses always do this. They always have and always will. Whether those mutations can be manipulated by the originators, in this case I'm meaning the Chinese, don't know that yet. But the body then, you know, upon encountering the virus later on, may go into hyper mode, hyper overdrive, in such a way that it overwhelms your own body's system. An autoimmune response that may wind up doing very bad things, including killing you.
Yeah, like lupus or some of those other autoimmune disorders, the body turns on itself.
Well, yeah, the because of the manipulation by the messenger RNA of our own body's DNA systems.
Mm-hmm.
The immune system, like I said, it can go into hyperdrive. And I'm not a scientist, so if anybody is a scientist and can explain this a little better than I can, please jump in. But my understanding is that the immune system then may go into an overreaction, cytokine storm and all of that, that then may overwhelm the person and lead to death.
Well, the cytokine storm, that's what happens in the later stages of COVID. And as I understand, I've had Dr. Zelenko on, and we have had, you know, folks that know a whole lot about this. I'd like to get Harvey Risch on from Yale. I've been in touch with him as well. And the idea is that, you know, in the early stages of COVID, it's very curable. You know, you get hydroxychloroquine, you get ivermectin, you get, I get out in the sunshine for my vitamin D. I've got my elderberry zinc lozenges, so I'm building up my zinc, and I've been fine. I don't wear a mask, and I run around all the time outside. I'm constantly in contact with people, you know, on the day job. And so there are ways that you can take your own precautions and do that. It's like people that don't get the flu. The flu shot is now four times stronger for seniors. You know, the Fluad flu shot, they made it four times stronger, I think, because they've systematically weakened immune systems over the years by sort of retraining the body to that one particular flu strain. And so the body can't adapt to the other flu strains coming in the same way with COVID. Does that make sense, Claire? What do you think?
I think it does, as, again, a non-expert. And I'm one of those lucky people that's never had flu in my entire life. May it continue. I'm knocking on some wood here in the house. people who overprotect themselves and their immune systems from any sort of challenge whatsoever wind up with a weak immune system. I mean, it's the same thing if you don't work out, you don't go to the gym, you don't exercise, you're not going to have, healthy, strong muscles. You got to challenge your own body's systems to remain strong. And if you protect it or try to protect it from every single thing that comes along, you won't have any natural defenses.
Yeah, I've heard that the immune system needs exercise just like everything else does. And, you know, your brain, if you want to keep thinking, then you better keep thinking, kind of thing. You know, because if you stop... Yeah, everything we have is that. And that's when people stop reading or stop intellectually discussing things or stop, you know, at a certain age, they just kind of, you know, sit on the porch and rock in the chair or they retire and watch TV all day. You know, you lose your brain because you're not using it. You know, and it's the same kind of thing going on here. Immune systems, as I'm learning more and more about them all the time, need exercise. My exercise for my immune system was being a tour guide in San Francisco for 8 years. I met people from all over the world. There isn't a nation where I haven't shaken the hands of somebody on this planet. Maybe Antarctica. That's probably it. But everywhere else. But it's true. They all came through San Francisco. So I've been exposed to everybody. You know, and my immune system is great. You know, I think I got corona back, it was like December, you know, last year when I was trying to get guest hosts, my voice sounded like, it sounded like hell. It was really bad. But, you know, a couple of weeks, I was fine, you know. And so my immune system, and I didn't have any special medicine or anything like that. So our immune systems, if we use them, can be incredible. Now, they're not perfect, and they do give out eventually. Everything gives out, you know. But what I'm curious about is this combination, this synergistic effect of getting these particular vaccines that modify your body. Now, I'll see if I can find an expert that can tell us how this works. But Claire, from what you know, as to how this works, it changes. It, messenger means it tells your DNA what to do, and so you get this
it
injection.
It tells your DNA to produce certain antibodies.
Okay.
And your body is supposed to do that naturally upon exposure in the normal course of life.
Mm-hmm.
But this hypes it up, I think. This puts it into hyperdrive. And like I said, in some people, in any case, when the body then encounters the virus again in the future, that production, that DNA production, artificially induced DNA production of antibodies can go into an overdrive, you know, hyperdrive kind of situation that overwhelms the body. And not only, you know, it doesn't do what it's only supposed to do, which is go after, you know, the virus, but actually floods the system with too much, in other words, and you wind up.
How is that being recorded? You know,
your own body's reaction.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, how is that being recorded? in terms of world health statistics? Is that being called a cytokine storm, an immune response? Is it being called something else? I mean, are they listing it as a vaccination, you know, injury or death? I mean, I don't know.
It doesn't matter what you die of. I mean, it could be a motorcycle accident, an infected hangnail, a heart attack. It's the virus.
It's all COVID.
You died of the virus.
Okay. So where do you see this going? As we look more and more into this and we look more into China and what they're doing, do you have like a forecast of what you think is going to come out with this?
Well, unless the world community holds the Chinese Communist Party responsible for what it's done and what it continues to do with its biological weapons program, it will continue. And who knows what the next agent will be that gets unleashed upon the world. Now, I don't know whether this particular, you know, SARS-CoV-2 was released on purpose or by accident. I can see arguments either way.
Okay.
But the point is it got out. And once it did get out, the Chinese Communist Party, in a calculated, opportunistic way, ensured that it spread to the rest of the world. That is criminal. They need to be held to account for that. And steps need to be taken to hold them to account for the biological weapons program in the first place that created this thing.
How would we do that exactly? We can't do that with this administration, insurrection. So how do we actually hold China accountable?
I mean, I think the first thing, of course, is to actually talk about it, to actually expose them, transparency. And that means working through the WHO, if they're at all capable of anything honest at this point, which I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not, then individual countries like the United States and others are so affected by this pandemic, there are plenty of us, together expose what the Chinese have and have been doing. That's the first step. And once that happens, there would be a backlash from many quarters of the world. I mean, we wouldn't even. I mean, I'm thinking, of course, you know, sanctions and a refusal to collaborate on any more such scientific, joint work together, all those sorts of things. Refusing to allow their scientists to join in any of our scientific studies or programs, exchange programs, shut down, all of that.
Yeah. See, I would go after the money, which is what they need to drive all this. You know, stop, close down, you know, shipping ports owned by China. Stop, you know, Chinese ships from coming to your port. Massive tariffs, you know, anything on the world currency, default on loans that China has made.
Well,
yep, sorry.
We're too interconnected for that. I mean,
okay.
We are not de-linked commercially, supply chain from China. We are, and nobody else. We are intricately connected.
So
there's no way to disconnect it, right, just by snapping fingers.
Interesting. Okay,
I mean,
so that's not an option.
Think of the
All
product,
right.
you yeah. know, that we rely on China for. For example, the majority of U.S. pharmaceuticals, our medicines, our drugs, are produced in China.
So think of the logic of this. We have a nation that's creating a bioweapons program that released a virus that they spread around the world, you know, not amongst their own people, although it did happen, you know, that is supplying us with pharmaceuticals, the same nation that gave substandard steel that went into the New Bay Bridge, that gave, you know, infected moldy sheetrock, that gave defective pet food, that has given, I'm sure, defective, you know, PPE, personal protection equipment, you know, and we're trusting them to make pharmaceuticals? That to me seems irrational.
This reliance on Chinese manufacturing of our drugs and pharmaceuticals goes back many decades, and decoupling that and bringing that production back home again, or at least moving it to other, you know, more trustworthy locations, is going to be a big, big project, and it's going to take a long time.
Well, this is what Trump was doing, amongst other things. Wasn't he trying to bring pharmaceuticals back
here? Which is why they had to shut him down.
Yeah. Is there any evidence that you found or have heard about as to how badly Trump was lied to and who did it? Because I remember, and my suspicions are Peter Navarro was the head of this, with a group that said, ride the virus out, It's just another virus. Don't go through any supreme efforts. And I think the Dr. Fascist crowd said, oh, no, this is the worst thing in the world. We're going to have 200,000 people die. You better lock down the economy. You better declare a state of emergency. Do you have any insight into how Trump was lied to and by whom?
No, and I don't necessarily think it was lying either. I think that at the beginning of this, nobody really knew what it was or what its effects would be. But then further on, it certainly wasn't the federal government that locked anything down. The federal government and Fauci and NIH, they have no authority to do anything like locking down anything.
So why did the states do it?
At the local level by governors and mayors and local jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that turned into little petty tyrants.
Yeah.
Not the
you don't
federal
think Fauci
government
coordinated
at any
that?
Level.
You don't think,
I'm sorry, what?
See, I think Fauci coordinated that. He let it slip in one of his press conferences.
He has the authority to do that.
I know he doesn't have the authority, but I remember very distinctly in a press conference where he said, I talk to governors all the time. I'm thinking to myself, why is he talking to governors all the time? And then the lockdowns happened. You know, I can't prove
it. He may have, I mean, the things that he told them may have frightened them enough or alternatively given them enough, enough cause to allow their inner petty tyrant out, but Fauci had nothing to do with the lockdowns. It was local level tyrants, Marxist mayors, you know, communist governors.
We had the same thing here. In fact, even DeSantis locked us down initially. Our own mayor here, Mayor Lindsay in Milton, Florida, said, I'm just following the chain of command. I have to follow the lockdowns. It's like, there is no chain of command like that. Where did these people get the idea? This may be a more Jonathan question, but where did these folks get the idea that they could supersede the Constitution, that their public health laws, you know, can supersede and violate all of our constitutional rights? I mean, the Constitution is still supreme. There is no on and off switch, as Pianki is fond of saying. And yet, not only did they make orders they had no authority to make, but people followed orders that they had no responsibility to follow. That's the part I don't understand.
They made it all up.
Okay.
And people fell in line. It was amazing. I mean, that's one of the great disappointments, perhaps, of this whole episode is to see how willingly Americans just went along like sheep or lemmings off the cliff. And just followed orders and mindlessly, like automatons, fell in line. I mean, that's horribly disappointing about Americans.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the scariest thing that really comes out of that, because if it can happen that easily and that quickly with no objection, we've got problems. I've got a couple other questions I want to get to if we can. One is on China and their biological weapons program. Are they experimenting at all on Mongolians, Uyghurs, Tibetans? Are they using their client states, or that's probably the wrong word, their conquered territories is probably better, to experiment and see what their biological weapons will do?
Don't know. Do not have any evidence of that.
Okay. That's good, actually.
You know, certainly something that one would think about, but no evidence that I know of right now. Other people may have that evidence, but I don't.
Okay. Yeah. I want to talk about Taiwan. I found an article right before the show that Taiwan is threatening to shoot down Chinese drones, which actually seems a good idea because there's nobody on board. It's an act of war, but so is, you know, going into Taiwanese territory. But it seems like the safest resistance you can do without, giving an excuse for China to invade, which is what they're want to do anyway. So what do you think of the drone situation?
Well, it's just another, ramping up of the threats against Taiwan. I mean, they've been invading their airspace with manned aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
That is, Beijing has been invading Taiwan airspace with manned aircraft increasingly and increasing numbers, over these last months. It's very clear that China intends eventually to forcibly reincorporate Taiwan into the mainland, and Taiwan will resist, of course. Drones is just another phase of all of that. They have every right to shoot down the drones.
Okay.
Taiwan does.
Yeah. And what kind of backing would they receive from the Biden insurrection? I'm laughing as
knows?
I ask you. Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, this administration currently in office is owned by the Chinese Communist Party. What can they do? You know, one false move, one false step, and they'll be blackmailed.
Yeah, and this is another reason I don't understand why the alleged Republican Party hasn't already filed, you know, impeachment. Although I don't know how you impeach somebody who's not legally allowed to be there, but at least it'd be a start. And they've completely, you know, bowed down, kowtowed, kissed the ring, and there's just no objections at all. They let budget bills go through under, I know what you're going to say, but I just said they let stimulus and this new infrastructure bill go through, you know, as reconciliation to avoid a filibuster, but they're not reconciliation bills, and no Republican stands up and says that. That's what's driving me crazy. Go ahead, Claire. I know what you're going to say, because they are.
It's the uniparty. It's not two parties. Yeah. With different philosophies. It is a uniparty at the top levels, not at the grassroots levels, I should say. Because at the grassroots level, and this is what we're going to be seeing, I think, massively across the country this year going into next, and, you know, election year midterms next year, 2022. But at the leadership level, at the top levels, complete uniparty. They're the same.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they get rid of the debt ceiling. That's why they change the rules on all kinds of things. And, you know, no objections. There are some helpful signs. And there is resistance going on. I think the best one that made the news lately was this Canadian priest from Poland who was called the police Nazis when they walked into his Good Friday service. You know,
I don't know
if it was a synagogue. Yeah.
Although was that a priest or was that a rabbi?
I'm not sure.
People call it a Passover service.
I think it was Passover. I think he's a rabbi.
Yeah, because I thought I saw a kippah on his head.
Okay,
but
well, there you
case,
go.
The same thing.
Yeah, but he's
the
resisting.
Same idea.
He's Polish.
You know,
I think that's probably more important because he came from a communist country, so he knows. He doesn't want these people in there. And it's as we have Josie who calls in, you know, who grew up in Nicaragua, and me spending my one day in East Berlin, that was enough. You know, I've seen communism up close. I don't want anything to do with it. It's fascinating that those are the folks resisting. And the other thing is it doesn't take that much to cause the left to back off. They'll take everything they can. But if you stand up to them, you know, they're basically cowards at heart. You know, very vindictive, powerful, nasty cowards who will, you know, do horrible things, but basically cowards. You know, when the vaccine passports, for example, Governor DeSantis resisted. Governor Abbott in Texas resisted. Now the federal government say, well, we don't necessarily have to require them. And so let's push back on this. So this whole idea of pushing back, it's not that hard to resist these people. They exist, you know, the paper tiger. It's a myth that these, you know, all-powerful leftists, they're going to dominate our society and take over. Because if you challenge them, you know, they're a bunch of weenies. They do back off. You know, they're only strong in ridiculously large numbers. You know, when they're attacking you, you know, when you're defenseless. That's the way it looks to me. One priest kicks out a bunch of cops. Good for him. Makes worldwide news. So it can be done.
Well, Claire? Important is to know what your legal rights are. For example, that rabbi, if that was a rabbi, cleric, knew that the police were not allowed in his establishment, his shul, if that was a shul, without a warrant. That was his legal basis.
Mm-hmm.
They had no warrant.
Yeah.
But you have to know these things and be conversant with your own legal rights, your own legal system, in order to stand up to them.
Yeah. And in the United States, a warrant wouldn't be valid anyway because we have the First Amendment. You know, Congress can't make a law, you know, establishing, you know, the Church of America with the president as Archbishop of America, like England, but nor can they prevent the free exercise thereof of religion. So they couldn't walk into a church anyway. You know, all these church lockdowns and close downs were the voluntary compliance of the churches that didn't have to do it. They had the First Amendment. They could have resisted, but they didn't. That's the problem. I'm going to bring Jonathan back. His line got a little noisy there for a minute. Claire, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree that, again, back to the comment I made a little bit earlier, I am amazed and disappointed at how many Americans simply, you know, buckled and caved and went along with all of the unconstitutional measures, you know, taken by the local Marxist tyrants.
Yeah. I want to look into the future a bit. This may not be – it's probably not your area of expertise, but I'm going to ask Peter the same question probably at some point. It seems to me that manned fighters, as fun as they are to watch, you know, and as big as aircraft carriers are vulnerable to missiles – excuse me, man fighters are subject to, to the limitations of the human body, it seems to me that we're using drones more and more. And do you see a day when drone air forces or drone forces might be controlled by, you know, all kinds of folks on the ground or even supercomputers, you know, sort of running their own little drone attacks of multiple drones with supercomputers taking humans completely out of it, you know, sort of like the Terminator kind of thing where the machines are actually doing the battling?
Oh, yeah,
are we
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, we're already heading in that direction, certainly.
Okay. What do you know? What can you tell us?
Well, I'm not a drone expert or an aerial warfare expert either, but, I mean, you can see the increased use of drones. Anybody from, you know, the Chinese against Taiwan to Hezbollah flying, trying to penetrate Israeli airspace. And the thing is that these drones can carry, you know, not only cameras for photo reconnaissance, but payloads, like payloads of explosives. And you know, we, the United States, have developed very sophisticated drones for battle spaces in the Middle East and elsewhere. So this is the direction of future warfare, certainly.
Yeah. I got Pianki back on the line, so I'm going to get him into the conversation here. We have about 9 minutes left. So I'm done with my questions.
Yeah.
So it's okay. We got time. I'm done with everything I wanted to ask. But so Jonathan, if you want to come back in, feel free. Pianki, you're on with Claire.
Yeah. Good morning, Claire. Oh yes, that's going to be the trend of the future because in aircraft, the G forces the human body can't take, and by the way, the female body can take more G forces than the male can. But no, you're going to look at IT.
Why is that
warfare?
Why I'm curious now why that is.
Well,
is that
you only
case?
Got
why
9 minutes.
Why don't we have women pilots? What's that?
You do have women combat pilots. And
but they can take more G-forces. Why aren't the most of the fighter pilots women? That would make more sense.
Well, maybe it's because they don't want to, but there's nothing as it was in the past denying them from.
Yeah.
But, yes, they can take more G-forces.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Well, here's another thought.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Department of Defense, the Pentagon, according to reporting at least, is shortly to come out with a lot of declassified information about what is now being called unidentified aerial phenomena. Notice they're not called unidentified flying objects anymore because the phenomena that have been recorded, photographed, seen by our Army, our Air Force and Navy pilots, they're not actually flying according to the laws of aerodynamics. They don't have wings. They don't have ailerons. They don't have tails. They don't have tail fins.
They're not planing
any...
through the air as an airplane does, as Wolfgang Langewisch described it? Yeah. So
well,
are they...
We don't know how they maneuver through the air, but they are doing things. You heard, you were talking about pulling Gs that are, in as far as our own understanding so far of physics and aerodynamics goes, it's impossible. What they're doing is impossible, and yet they have been recorded doing that. So it should be very interesting to see when those reports come out. They're saying in a couple of months or so, DOD will release these.
Peter Pry was talking about that with John Ratcliffe, was supposed to bring him out before he left office with Trump. I wish he had, you know, because you got to get this stuff out there because who's to say what the Biden insurrection is going to do? But, yeah, the UFO, we're all waiting for the UFO report. I think that would be fascinating. Let's get to Joseph.
UAP.
You guys got a call earlier. What's that, Claire?
UAP. They're not flying. They don't fly.
All right, let me write that down so I don't make them.
Drones fly. Laws of aerodynamics.
Unidentified. What is
things
it, unidentified?
Well, it would have to be using some sort of anti-gravity. And that there is...
or using gravity.
And of course, when you get out in space where you have no wind resistance, any small amount of propulsion would take you quite a ways. But that there is very interesting, and many people are talking along those lines, have been for some time.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. Well, it's arrogant to assume that with all the possibilities, with all the, as Carl Sagan used to say, billions and billions of stars in the sky, to think that we're the only thing out there, that to me is naive. Josie, you're on the line. We got about 6 minutes left.
Just quickly, I wanted to say, one of our friends that knows a lot about drones, he was making a comment that the reason the drones are so cheap in America is because China, they lower the prices so a lot of Americans can own drones so they can keep an eye on us. And they don't have to be a spy in this country, the Chinese. They have the drones to send the signals to them. So that was the purpose of lowering the price. You can
so
buy
there's
a
an extra chip in there?
It's $100.
Huh? Yeah, so there's extra technology in there, so the sending signals directly to China from our drones. That would make sense. I mean, your utilities like Gulf Power just had announced that they're using tons of drones in their surveillance. I've seen them, you know, checking out power lines and things like that. And what better for China if they want to have an EMP attack to have surveillance on all our power, you know, our power grid?
Yeah.
Claire, what do you think of that?
Well, I again, this gets back to our connections to supply lines coming from China. You know, time to decouple.
Well, I agree with Claire. We should be buying foreign products of that nature anyway. It should be American made, for obvious reasons.
American made. And Joe Biden just sent millions of dollars to Wuhan Lab to help to continue with their research like they've been doing every year.
How do you do that? Was that was there a budget authorization or something, or he just used the slush fund, or how did he do that, Josie?
No, this comes out of Health and Human Services Department of the Cabinet through NIH, through NIAID. That is the chain through EcoHealth Alliance, what I was telling you before.
Right.
It's
I got that article. That's the one that got me kicked off Facebook.
Who's the brain behind Joe Biden?
That's a good question.
You mean there are some?
Obama's
no, who's the person? Who are the people? Josie thinks Obama is behind it all. I tend
Obama
to agree, Josie.
Obama and Bill Gates. Yeah.
Well,
Obama,
Soros,
Bill Gates.
Is that Jonathan? Are you coming back in here? I thought I heard.
Yeah, apparently. I had my thing on mute, but apparently mute turns itself off sometimes. But, you know, I tried to get investments in Eastern Europe after the Berlin Wall fell. I got a chance to look at the bilateral investment treaties that you know, Claire is probably familiar with. They all have exceptions for certain industries that are considered critical for certain countries. So we have these bilateral free trade agreements, which always have exceptions about certain, you know, critical technologies, but of course not the United States. We, you know, we're wimps and we're, you know, evil triumphs because good is dumb.
We refuse
and,
to act in our own interests. I've said that since I got to this country. I've never seen a country – the first thing I noticed about the United States when I was a teenager, I've never seen a country less willing to act in its own interest than this one. I'm sorry, Jonathan. Go ahead.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay.
I know we're –
I got a couple minutes left. Who wants to sum up our week so far where we are? Well, let me try something then.
I wanted to –
Go ahead, Jesse.
I wanted to say when President Trump's returned all of this executive order and everything, they're fake. Mm-hmm. And I do want to see the Republicans getting some action on impeaching these fake people right now. And I don't see it. You're right, Greg. I don't see anything going on to impeach
the Uniparty
criminals.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Jonathan. Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point. Jonathan, when it comes to – I made a sort of a timeline for how this can work to get Trump back in office where he should be, that right now we're doing the forensic audits, which will certify the fraud. And that'll allow the state legislatures to say, oops, we goofed. We're going to send you Trump electors to Congress. Congress is going to wimp out because Kamala Harris is probably not even going to open the envelopes and say, I don't know what you're talking about. She'll lie. And it'll have to go to the Supreme Court. So the question is, in the minute that we have left, will the Supreme Court do the right thing if Trump gets way over 270 electors, which I believe he will, once these forensic audits are done, and it'll be up to them to actually, you know, do the election correction themselves. Will they do what they did in 2000, do it properly, or will they totally wimp out and say, oh, there's no case here, I don't even want to take it? What do you think is going to happen? Because that's the real key question.
No, they won't. I mean, the right thing by whose standards? They'll do the right things by, you know, official inside the Beltway Washington. They'll definitely do the right thing. But to do the right thing by the Constitution, no, they won't do the right thing. And it's unprecedented. I mean, it's really, truly unprecedented what would happen if the election were considered wrong. No one would know what, I mean, it's, I would have my theories, but there's no guide rails in what to do about that.
Yeah, that's why precedent sucks. Claire, we got about 30 seconds. Can you see the election correction happening with Trump back in, or do you think that's just there's no way they're actually going to go through with it?
I'm with Jonathan. We are in completely uncharted territory here. I don't know what's going to happen, except that as massive information comes out of these forensic audits in different places, there will be a groundswell of American opinion that may drive decisions more than we see at this moment.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that's what's going to happen. The 80 million Trump supporters, you know, once Trump gets over 270 electors, it's corrected for the fraud. They're going to demand that something happen, and that's where I think the Supreme Court's going to knuckle under that pressure, and I'm hoping that they will do the constitutional thing and put Trump back in. More to talk about next time. Thank you all. This has been another incredible show. I really appreciate you all being here. I couldn't do it without you. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow, 7 o'clock in the morning, Central Time.